Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And pronounce your last name, Mark. It's Briody or Briody?
Briody.
Briody. Briody. Okay. All right. I was never sure. I'll probably still mess it up again anyway. So.
Everybody gets it wrong all the time.
I know. That's why I was watching a couple interviews earlier and I heard people say like different versions about, like, all right, what is it? All right, let's get the intro going and we will be on in a second. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Rats.
Great intro.
Oh, thank you very much. That is an intro done by a band that's been on the show once before. They are called Frostbite BC. They are from Massachusetts. Very cool band. They're like a Christmas type band. They all have like a different getup. One of the guys is called Mandir, the bassist. He actually helped me make the animated version of that video. But they're really a bunch of cool guys. And yeah, it's a good song. But today we are joined by Mark. And see, now I forgot it. Briody, right?
Briody, yeah.
Briody, Mark Briody from the band Jag Panzer. And we're also joined by Ken Pike from the band Absalom. What's up, Ken?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing real, real good. This was kind of a surprise for me.
Yeah, the other guys will be joining soon. I'm not sure what they're doing, but you know what? I figured Mark's already here. Ken, you're already here. So let's just start the show. And we'll talk about the new Jag Panzer album, The Hollowed. But before we get to that, because I want to wait for the other guys. You have another album that it's an older album. And it's really never talked about much. Dissident Alliance. Remember this album, Mark?
Oh, yeah. Everybody hates it.
Everybody hates it.
Yeah.
What's your feelings on an album? I mean, it's a different album. It's kind of like Pantera-ish in a way, I guess. But like, how would you describe it? What are your feelings on that album?
Yeah, the production is terrible. It doesn't sound good. I think there's some quality songs on there, but just the whole presentation of how it sounds is just terrible. So it just doesn't leave a good impression.
Yeah. Did you ever think about going back and like re-recording any of those songs or anything, or you're just done with them?
We did a couple on we did an album called Decade of Nail Spike Bat, and I think we redid two of them.
Okay. Yeah, but you're never gonna ever revisit this ever again? No. That bad, huh? What was going on with the band at the time? Because you got a different singer as well. So what was with the band?
Different singer, different lead guitar player. And, you know, like I always say with Jag Panzer, everybody in the band gets an equal share of the writing, the sound. So, yeah, it's going to sound different. We change any members. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple guys in the band who were hard workers, you know, and they're very cool guys. And they worked hard and they put their stamp on the music.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was going on though, like with Harry, I guess, whatever, and some of the guys that left the band to, you know, for you to get a new vocalist and everything, was there like something going on or?
Well, Harry had joined Riot a few years earlier and, you know, we grew up huge Riot fans. So we fully supported that. And then we moved on to another singer and he left Riot, joined another band. So there was just time periods where there was just no openings. You know, we're always friends with Harry, but
yeah,
the time to get him back didn't come till a few years after that.
Yeah, no, you and Harry, because you just posted the picture the other day. You, John, and Harry have known each other since kindergarten. That's insane. Yeah. That's a very long time.
Me, kindergarten, their first grade. Yeah, because they're both older than me.
Okay.
I like to remind them of that all the time.
How much older are they?
Year older.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yeah, they're old. They're pretty old. Now, did you guys, like, when you were growing up, did you talk about, like, when did you really actually start talking about starting a band together? Like, did you talk about that, like, since kindergarten, or did that start, like, later on, or?
It was a little later. We were all music fanatics growing up. I mean, we used to, you know, go to John's house, and he'd put the stereo speakers in the window, and we just hang out outside and maybe drink some wine that we con someone into buying for kids, or sometimes we throw the Frisbee around. We spent a lot of time just hanging out, and Harry bought an electric guitar. I think he might have been 14 and I was 13, and he called me up. I got an electric guitar, and I went up there, and he was playing Kiss songs, and I couldn't believe how cool it was.
Really?
Man, so I had to get a guitar. So I got a cheap $15 guitar from a pawn shop, and Harry showed me how to play God of Thunder. And it just sort of snowballed from there. We had a buddy, Rick, that started playing drums, and we needed a bass player. So we just turned to our buddy, John, who was he was a good trombone player. So he knew music. And we just asked him, "You want to play bass?" And he said, "Yeah, let's go to the music store and I'll buy a bass."
Wow.
So that's how it all started. It was probably when I was 15 that all started, and those guys were 16.
Wow. Okay, cool. Now, was there anybody in your family like a musician or anything, or into music?
My dad was a very good vocalist. My mom was a terrible singer. I mean, she was just a sweet lady, but just had no voice at all. So yeah, not really in my house. I think Harry's mom sang, not really big in Harry's, and not really big in John's house either. You know, it was really more listening to music.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kiss is kind of like the band that really got you into wanting to play guitar.
I wasn't as big as John and Harry were like huge Kiss fans, you know, dressing like them for Halloween. I mean, I thought they were okay. I was just excited that I could play a song that I recognized. I mean, I didn't play it that well, but you could tell it was God of Thunder. I mean, my favorite band was more like Rainbow, but there's no way I was going to be pulling off any Blackmore parts.
Yeah, no, that's all right. Kiss can't play half of their songs nowadays anyway, so it's all backing tracks. What do you think about that whole thing that's going on? I mean, there's a lot of bands that use them, and I'm not really against it, because sometimes there's things that you can't really perform live. You know, like, say if you've got orchestra stuff in your music, you can't bring an orchestra with you to shows. So obviously you're going to need some kind of backing tracks. But what's your thoughts on that whole backing track thing?
I don't like it if there's a musician on stage that can play it. I mean, we use our intros to all of our songs on a backing track, because that's just recording. And otherwise, our drummer wears headphones, but more as a timing reference. We don't really put much tracks in the backing track intros, a gong maybe, or like an explosion, or maybe some dialogue. But yeah, I'm not a fan of, you know, putting guitars, vocals, bass, drums, or anything like that in a backing track if you have those musicians up on stage.
Yeah, it makes sense. Ken, you want to talk? I don't want to take up all the time here.
I'm kind of froze or something.
You're kind of frozen. Well, we can hear you though, so that's fine.
As long as you can hear me. I'm curious as to going back to when y'all went to move from Colorado to Southern California, did you guys get into playing the North Hollywood Sunset Strip scene?
Oh, we didn't play anywhere. We didn't have any equipment. I mean, we grew up in the poorest part of our city. I mean, we didn't have anything. So we went out to California. We had to sell equipment to go out there. So we were out there, and literally, we didn't have drums. We didn't have amps. You know, we really, really had nothing. It was, really poorly planned because we were just stupid and didn't know what we were doing. And so there was no gigs out there.
Wow. Okay. That was curious because I kind of messed around on the Sunset Strip, actually North Hollywood scene, for quite a few years. And I just thought, I remember having seen Jag Panzer up on, some of the marquees at like the Whiskey or Gazzari's and places like that. But the other question I had real quick is when you guys started, there's definitely in your older material is the new wave of British heavy metal. I the influence there. But were you guys also influenced with like the symphonic metal, the power metal, like bands like Halloween and stuff like that? Because in this newest one, I hear a lot of symphonic, and it's great. I've liked Jag Panzer for a long time, and the new one's great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, our symphonic influences, I love Halloween, but yeah, I have to separate what I was influenced by versus what I just love listening to. Mm-hmm. And the new wave of heavy metal is absolute monster influence on me. As far as keys and orchestration, definitely would have to come from Rainbow. I would listen to Rainbow constantly, and you've got keys and some orchestration and things like Gates of Babylon and Rainbow Eyes. So yeah. we sort of tried it on our first EP. It wasn't really that good, but like Iron Shadows, we tried like a big choir, and the Crucifix has a string sound. It was just kind of on a cheap synthesizer, but we were trying that early to add a little bit of Rainbow influence symphony stuff, and I think it took us a few albums to kind of master that. But master is the wrong word, to kind of get it at least acceptable.
It sounds really, really good. I'm a traditional heavy metal person, and but I like a lot of the symphonic metal as well, and I like the way it sounds in your guys' newest stuff. It's very balanced. It's still got that the traditional metal I guess like a little Judas Priest, whatever, in there, but the symphonic on top of it just makes the songs are really dynamic. So yeah. I know I'm froze. I don't know if you guys see me frozen, so you can't stop nodding.
I see him going back and forth.
He's going back and forth.
Yeah, there we go. We'll leave it on that.
Okay, great. Right now, that was my two questions for now.
Well, we have Mark Oostervik in the chat, and he said he's very excited to see you guys come back to Europe again. And he just saw you this past January. He saw where you play. In Rotterdam? Do you remember playing in the show in Rotterdam?
Yeah.
Yeah, how did that go? Because he actually said he had a talk with you and Ken.
That was a disaster show for me because the amp head blew out. So I had to play with a clean guitar. It sounded like a surf guitar, but show must go on. So right. Yeah, it's very frustrating for me, but it was, all shows are fun and you get to meet people and hang out. So, it was cool. It was just, a little rough for me.
How far into the set did that happen?
Oh, before the set started.
Oh, really? Oh, so you played the whole thing? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I had to play the whole thing. Yeah, we don't take backline on tour. We have to make touring as inexpensive as possible just to do it. Yeah. So I only bring one guitar and no amp. So I have to borrow an amp there. And, you know, the club had an amp. And, you know, it was a nice amp. But right when I plugged in, distortion channel was out on it. And they said they thought that maybe it happened the gig before or something, but yeah, I just had to play through the clean channel.
Oh, wow. that must have been strange. But wow, is that like the worst thing that's ever happened to you guys, or do you have anything else that's happened maybe worse than that?
It's happened about three times to me. It happens.
Three times?
Yeah. It happens every tour, I think. I hope it doesn't happen this one coming up next week, but we'll see.
Otherwise, you're going to have to start writing albums through a clean guitar. This way nobody will notice. Yeah. All right. Well, you did some promo stuff for this album. I mean, you always do like extra stuff, because I'm always seeing you on Facebook. You're always posting that you know, this is coming up, that's coming up. And one thing that you did, you released a comic book of the album, and you did this because the album is a concept album, and it's in the view of like through the animal's view. And a comic book you did a little bit different, and it's through like the human view. So tell me a little bit about, like, you know, the two different ideas. Tell me about that.
We had a band chat, and we were in it every day. I think it ended up with 8,000 messages in there before we started recording. We just had these conferences with band members daily, and I noticed everybody was asking Harry different parts of the story. And I thought, well, if the band members are interested, maybe other people would be. And so I suggested we did a comic, and then I saw the price, and man, it's expensive to do a comic, but you know, you got to pay for a lot of art and production. And you know, I like to keep spreadsheets of, you know, what we sell and everything like that. So I had an idea of how many comics we could sell, and it looked like it could be a break even process if we sold them all. So that was good. So yeah, and we're actually pretty close now to selling them all. I think we have about under 50 left.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah. So people go buy it, because it looks, say, some of the artwork in there. It's really, really nice artwork. Who did the artwork? Is it the same guy who did the album stuff, or is somebody else?
We had a bunch of different artists involved in everything.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I wanted a comic. Yeah. We really wanted specialty artists for everything. So I had looked at about 20 comic book artists that I like, and, you know, some of them were too expensive, and
right.
You know, that's cool. Good for them getting paid more. But I couldn't afford them. So I finally narrowed it down to probably three or four who were within budget, but were still professional comic book artists. Yeah. And and his name's E. Rubio, and he actually had the time available. He had some clients cancel or something like that, so he had the time available. Mm-hmm. So I started working with him every day, sending notes over, and yeah, he was great. He'd get us rough sketches, and we'd talk about any changes or coloring or the mood of the scene. And yeah, he was just outstanding to work with.
Wow. Yeah. Because it did come out really cool. And I thought the whole concept too is very cool, because not too many bands put a lot of effort into their new albums. Usually they just put the album out or throw a box it out and just have some random stuff in it or whatever. But you guys put a lot of thought in it, and then making a comic book to go along with the album, and especially putting it through a different viewpoint, is really a cool idea, you know.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. We wanted a concept that was kind of like the adventure films we grew up with. You know, we all grew up with the Ray Harryhausen movies. You know, Jason the Argonauts and Clash of the Titans and Valley Guanji and movies like that. You know, that's what we went to the theater as kids, all Harry, John, and I. And so we wanted a kind of a classic adventure story with some monsters and some action and a little different. You know, most metal bands do a political theme, and that's cool, but we just wanted to do a old school adventure story.
Yeah. I think you guys stick more with that kind of stuff instead of like the political type stuff, so definitely better sticking with that. Ken, you got some stuff?
Weird question. How old are you?
I'm 60.
Okay, so yeah, I'm 62, so we're around the same age. Before, you know, back in the, well, that would still put you around this in the mid to late 70s. Before you got into metal, and what were your influences? When you first started to learn to play guitar. I know you mentioned Kiss, but were there other bands, 70s type bands that influenced you at that time?
Yeah, definitely Jimmy Page. I mean, I've loved Led Zeppelin since I was probably about 10 or 11. So definitely Jimmy Page. UFO, but you know, UFO and Rainbow, that is really intimidating for me. You know, Jimmy Page is a great guitar player, but you know, at least I could play the rhythm to Dazed and Confused or Whole Lot of Love or something. So yeah, it was playing Zeppelin simple rhythms was a huge influence on me, and it took me a few years before I could even think of playing anything by Blackmore or anything from UFO. It was also a huge influence when Ronnie James Dio joined Black Sabbath. You know, the Heaven and Hell just completely changed everything for me. I really worked on learning that whole album on guitar, and I just loved listening to it as a fan too. I mean, that was just, for me, groundbreaking albums, Heaven and Hell, Mob Rules.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, those are trying to play the rhythm to a lot of the Led Zeppelin songs that definitely would make you as you progress along a strong rhythm guitarist. So I was just curious about that. I'm always curious as to what a musician's influence is or was. You know, for guys that are around the same age as me, since we listened to, you know, a lot of the same stuff in the 70s, and especially guitar wise and vocals and stuff, I've always found that interesting. So thank you.
I also grew up, I took lessons at Johnny Smith's studio, and Johnny's was considered a jazz great. He was Bing Crosby's guitar player. So I took lessons there from right when I picked up the guitar, and it was very strict guitar lessons. I mean, we weren't playing Led Zeppelin riffs in guitar lessons. It was jazz theory, sight reading. I mean, it's really strict curriculum that I wasn't a big fan of as a kid, but I stuck with it. And it really, really helps me now. I think I'm a fairly clean player now because of those lessons.
Oh, definitely. You know, jazz. Jazz is hard. It's hard to play.
Yeah, it was. And the instructors there were, they were hardcore about you playing it correctly.
Wow. You're a better man than me. I can't do it. I learned to play rhythm listening to the Beatles, John Lennon. That's where I picked up rhythm guitar, and but jazz, no. back to you.
That's great learning from the Beatles.
Well, yeah, I mean, you listen to almost any Beatles song, but especially their, you know, their early stuff up until, I don't know, around 1967 with the Rubber Soul and Revolver albums. And you listen to the rhythms, and especially John Lennon's rhythm guitar playing. And some of that stuff is just like, how the heck was he doing this and singing at the same time? And, you know, in entertaining. When he's doing these intricate rhythms, you know, changing rhythms two and three times in a song, and that's what I wanted to learn. So, but I was a big Beatles fanatic anyway, so.
Yeah, the Beatles are awesome. I used to love them when
Beatles,
I was a kid.
Beatles but, are great, yeah.
But I got sick of them for a while. Then all of a sudden, right before my son was born, I'm like, let me go back to that and revisit that because I wanted to get my son into music. And listening to the Beatles, it's very easy to get into that because they're very simple. You know, they're just very catchy and just very easy for a younger kid to get into it. And he did. He was loving it. So that was, you know, pretty cool to get back into that again. And speaking of the Led Zeppelin, I just did a show like 2 weeks ago. And we did In Through the Outdoor. What do you think of In Through the Outdoor? A lot of people were like kind of split on it. Like they didn't really care for it too much because it is a different album for Led Zeppelin. But what do you think of that one, Mark?
It's, you know, in the Led Zeppelin realm, it's certainly not one of my favorites, but I liked it. I thought, you know, Carousel Amber was cool. All My Love. I actually really liked Hot Dog too.
Oh.
In the Evening. Cool. Not a big fan of Fool in the Rain.
Oh, really? Okay. But you like Hot Dog.
I do. I don't know anybody. I'm the only person I know that likes it.
Yeah, I think you are.
You know, it's a pretty cheesy, just straight up, you know, country rip, but yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it was pretty. It's pretty strange, but yeah, it is. I like the album actually. I think it's a pretty good album, especially you know, especially in the period of time that came out for them too. I mean, a lot of it sounded like a Robert Plant solo album basically, but it's still a pretty cool album, and it's fine that it's their last album. So I was happy with it. But to get back, since Ken sidetracked us, we'll get back to the new album. That's all right. I'm only joking with you. You actually, what's that?
You know, I'm like that.
Yes, I know.
I'm good at science.
Actually, this is Ken's first time he's actually been on a show. He saw that I was interviewing you tonight, Mark, and I said, you know what, you want to come on? Because I knew one of the guys wasn't coming on. I didn't know the whole co-hosts of mine weren't going to show up tonight. So I'm glad Ken came on and showed up. Everybody had another commitment. Something I don't know. One of the guys got something going on. Another guy got sick. Whatever. But they actually do like the album because they did mention some of them did get to listen to it. And they do like the new album. You got a new lead guitarist in Ken Rodarte. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Rodarte.
Yep. And he's actually been in the band for a while because he's been a touring musician with you guys. So now you finally ask him to officially join the band. How did he, obviously he probably wanted to be in the band because he's been with you guys for quite a while now, but did you have somebody else in mind or did you know you wouldn't use him anyway for the album?
Yeah, we wanted to see how his songwriting went. Both in two ways, both, you know, we wanted to hear the notes that he put down and we wanted to see how his temperament was because we get pretty ruthless recording. We have absolutely open opinions to every other member. No one gets offended or mad, but it's in your face sometimes. Like that note sucked. You got to get better on that. That right, melody's right. Boring. That is lame. Rewrite it. That thing you worked on for 3 days. No, toss it in the trash, do better. I mean, that's the way we've worked forever. And there's no love loss whatsoever. So we wanted to see if he could hang with that. Mm-hmm. And he could. The parts he delivered were great. So I was ready to hire him, you know, after he finished two songs. But nope, we had one guy in the band that said, no, I want to hear all 10. And he was dead serious. He did want to hear all 10. And after Ken submitted that 10th song, my phone rang like 20 seconds later. Okay, give him the job.
He did an awesome job, and I think hopefully he's here to stay because he's a very good lead guitarist. How come you're not like? Are you like not comfortable playing lead guitar, or you just like doing rhythm, or why don't you?
I'm just not into it. I just, the amount of work you have to put in is just incredible. Although I did do one on the Hallowed.
Right.
I hadn't done one for 30 years on a record. But we were, the last song on the album, I was trying to explain how I wanted the solo to go and nobody's getting it.
Right.
And I say, look, I want like a Tiamat sounding solo, like something off of Tiamat's Wild Honey. And I'm just getting blank stares in our morning call. So I just picked up a guitar and say, like this. So that's what's on the record. Yeah.
Oh, well, very cool. I'm glad you got on there finally.
Yeah.
And actually, Ken mentioned this, actually. I'll go back to you, Ken. He did mention how he likes the sound of the album. You guys recorded in a studio. The drummer, he wanted to do it in a studio, and he actually got to work with the bassist too. So tell me about that, because there is a very studio-sounding sound to the whole album. It doesn't sound very over-processed like a lot of the bands today sound, and it's very organic sounding. So tell me about that.
Yeah, we wanted the sound of a real drum kit. I mean, no sampled bass drums, no gating the snare, no none of that. So, you know, we found a great room at Ken Mary's studio, great drum room. We just cranked up the room mics. So you're really hearing the sound of Rickard's kit. We, you know, we wanted to record like the way Bonham did. You know, our music's nothing like Led Zeppelin, but we just appreciated that approach. And bass live with drums, you know, those two just locked in together. And I recorded my rhythm guitar. I had my amp was so loud, it was literally shaking my windows. I had to tell everybody within a block radius of me, hey, cut me some slack this weekend. We can need some loud guitars. With Harry's vocals, we dialed in a monitoring system exactly what he likes live. So he was approaching it like live vocals. And yeah, so we just, you know, we wanted to use the quality of being in a recording studio, you know, nice microphones and everything. But otherwise, we really wanted a live type environment. Anytime my amp feedback, I had feedback or squeal, I just left it on there. So all that's on the record, all my amp feeding back and everything, because I thought that sounds cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely, because it makes it sound more organic. So, which a lot of bands don't do today. They just pretty much, you know, cut all that feedback out and everything, makes it kind of stale. But no, it's I appreciate hearing all that stuff again, because a lot of bands don't, you can't differentiate bands from one band from the other nowadays. And hearing you guys put out an album like this, and it sounds like Jack Panzer, and that, you know, that's awesome, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see, what else do I got here?
We mixed it analog as well.
Oh yes.
No mixing in the computer. So we mixed it analog, had it mastered. I mean, we really try to make it sound a little different than what most people are doing nowadays in making albums.
Yeah. And you mixed it with the Morrisound Studios, and you've been working with them for a very long time, right?
Yeah, for over 20 years. Yeah, Jim's a great guy, and he knows the sound we're going for. He's got a great ear. So that was great. I mean, it was great just hanging out with Jim. He's such a cool guy, but having him mix the album is always a treat.
Yeah, definitely. And you get to work hands-on with him too, right? Like you go down there and work on it with him. Okay, cool.
Yeah, in the documentary, you see clips of us at the board, but yeah, we really weren't at the board. Jim let us go in front of it just for some video.
That's pretty cool. So did you get to see Ken Mary at his studio, or he wasn't there?
No, he was there. He engineered the drums and bass. He was great. Really? I mean, he's a talented guy, and yeah, he kept the sessions moving along. I mean, he got us a great sound on the headphones and the control room, you know, because our bass player was in the control room. So yeah, Ken dialed all that in like 20 minutes for everything, drum sounds and bass and everything. So it was great. I mean, yeah, he's a skilled guy.
Oh yeah, I really actually just got into his other band, the Fifth Angel band, and I really didn't know about that until he joined Flotsam and Jetsam, and I'm like, who's the new drummer or whatever, and I go back and find out he's from that band, and that band's awesome, man. I didn't realize how good they were, and they're from the 80s. And those are good. I gotta get the new album, but he's an awesome drummer. I did not expect to hear him drumming the way he does, especially on those Flotsam and Jetsam albums. He's like going off crazy on those albums.
Yeah, he's outstanding, world-class drummer.
Yeah, definitely. Ken, you got anything else?
I don't know. You've kind of covered the everything. In the past, you were talking about touring and that. Where are some of the places, venues and stuff that you guys have played through the years? Yeah, that's a question, huh?
Yeah. Oh, we played. I think one of my favorites was the Rainbow Music Hall. It's a Walgreens now, unfortunately, but it was the classic Denver venue. I mean, U2 played there. I mean, everybody from U2 to Judas Priest to Merciful Fate. I mean, it was just a great theater venue in Denver. It had phenomenal sound, great line of sight, great light show, incredible crew. I mean, there were shows going on there, you know, 4 and 5 nights a week for years. I mean, it was one of the coolest small venues around. So we got to play there about 3 times, and that was awesome. Playing the festivals in Europe is always really cool. You know, Keep It True, I love that so much. That I feel so at home at that festival. Played Wacken a couple times. That's a show you dream about when you're like a kid in front of a big audience. And yeah, we got it coming up again in a few weeks, so I'm getting excited. We've got Headbangers Open Air in Germany, which is the classic, you know, a classic German metal festival. We're playing Alcatraz, another giant festival in Belgium. We played a lot of classic venues, played the Trocadero in Philadelphia, played in Times Square, played the Key Club in LA. That was fun.
Actually, Times Square was the first time I saw you guys. I played at the...
Oh, okay, cool. WWE or BB Games?
Yes, yep. The WWE Theater, yep.
Yeah.
Which is now gone, but yeah, I remember that show. Yep. That was Iced Earth and Flames, I think, right? I don't know if you remember.
Yeah. And we played in Sofia, Bulgaria to like 7 people. And it was really cool because when we went outside after the gig, there was like 400 people outside, and I didn't realize that was a private party we were playing.
Oh, oh wow.
But it was really cool. I mean, the 7 people were great. I mean, it was just it was a fun gig, and Bulgaria was so different. It was just made a big impression on me. And so I liked the gig anyway, and then to go outside and just have all these people that were listening from outside. I mean, that was pretty cool.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Nope, I don't know if Kenny there.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, that was...
I wasn't sure.
That was my other sidetrack question.
I don't know what this connection is. Terrible, and my thing keeps going off. I keep freezing. You keep freezing. This usually never happens this often, but whatever happens.
Yeah, and it keeps freezing in such a way. I'm looking.
Yeah, you're cutting out.
And it's either I look like I have a surprised look on my face, or I look evil, like something. I'm really.
It works though. Maybe I'll keep it, and you can use it for the next album.
Oh, well, now I'm already done.
All right. what's with this new album, The Hallowed? Is there
like mimic a freeze?
There you go. Hey, you just stay like that. And I actually think you froze. No, now it actually froze. I love internet. It's so cool. We're all the freezing. What is Mark Ustavik is going crazy in the chat here. Netherlands, August 11th. Like, is that the show you're playing at, Mark? I don't know. Mike Warney says harder than steel. And Mark, Gwen, and me will be there in, I guess, the Netherlands or wherever. All right. For the Hallowed, do you have like a favorite song off of here or anything? Or favorite favorite about the album?
I missed about half the first half of what you were saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. With the new album, do you have like a favorite song or anything like that you really enjoyed about recording the album?
Yeah, I like the last song, Last Rites, because we were, we were arguing about that song for like 3 weeks. I mean, we just, nobody liked it. You know, everybody really? Liked that part, and then someone else liked another part, and then someone else liked a different part. So we kept rearranging it, changing parts and adding parts for 3 weeks on that song until everybody liked it. And I think it came out great. So I really love that song. I like Pray too, because it's like so much fun to practice. We're doing that on the next tour coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really, really fun to practice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of really catchy stuff on this album. And I think it's really one of the best Jack Panzer albums. I mean, I like pretty much every album except for this one, Dissident Alliance. But there's some cool songs on there anyway. But yeah, it's an awesome album, and everybody needs to check it out. And and this album too. This album is where pretty much it all started. Everybody talks about this album. What can you talk about with this album, Ample Destruction? Because every time somebody talks about Jag Panzer, they always bring up Ample Destruction. And how do you feel about Ample Destruction?
Oh, before I answer that, let me give a shout out to Mark O. You mentioned him a few times. He's one of the admins on Jag Panzer Brigade page. So thank you, Mark, for everything you do. I appreciate it. The thing about, you know, I'm very proud of Ample. I think it's a great record, but it gets a little bit annoying that people forget that it was not liked out of the gate. So that means we didn't get a tour. We didn't get Headbangers Ball. Mm-hmm. We didn't get, there was no bonus back then, no fan base from it. I mean, you know, we had to work it, you know, for years. You know, we were still, it was already out. We were still sending out tapes, just trying to get people to listen to it. We couldn't get a European record deal. I sent it to every label that I could find in Europe, and all of them refused it. It was a rough beginning for Ample, but I think it's a good record, and I'm very proud of it. A lot of people sometimes ask, you know, will you do another all Ample set again? Yeah, I really don't want to do that. I like to move forward. We've done it before for a couple promoters who are very close friends of ours, but yeah, I'm really not into doing an all Ample set live.
Yeah, I totally understand. I like to move forward, and you know, the new stuff you're putting out, it's completely different from this album anyway too. So, but just everybody just loves this album. What was the idea? Because this is like a long box type thing, and it's got all this, you know, it shows all like the different versions of the album and stuff like that. Whose idea was this to put this together? Was this yours, or was this HR Records' idea?
Oh, for Ample, they, you know, it keeps selling. You know, we signed a deal with HR years ago, and they did a wonderful job with it. And anytime people would write and ask me, you know, about this version or something different, I said, you know, just write High Roller. So High Roller's just, you know, they're trying to fill the market, you know, and for me, it's really about, you know, keeping the music alive.
Yeah.
You know, we have right now, everything we've ever done is back in print except for Dissonant Alliance. So that's important to me, is having everything in print. The different versions and everything High Roller does, I mean, you know, that's cool. I like them. I put them on my wall. But for me, it's really about just keeping the music accessible so someone can always buy a copy of Ample Destruction.
Yeah. And there's been so many different album covers too. Which is your favorite? Is that your favorite album cover, or is there another one that somebody's used over the years?
No, I always liked the original, and the whole band always advocated for only the original. Yeah. I mean, we were very dug our heels in that, only the original, but we lost a lot of battles back then. In the industry, it was pretty much a standard that you did a new cover on a reissue. So we lost a lot of battles with record companies on that, because we were very much of the thought that it should only have the original cover.
Yeah, definitely. I think so too. I like that one too the most. Actually, we got one question. How hard was the recording process for the first? Did you get that? Because my thing froze again.
No, I didn't get it.
Oh, sorry. He said, this is Mark Warney. How hard was the recording process for the first album, for Ample Destruction?
Yeah, it was interesting because we recorded it in the winter and the studio was heated by a wood-burning stove.
No.
So we had to sometimes kind of throw a blanket or try to keep the stove quiet. But also, for some idiotic reason I can't explain, we had whoever was recording that day had to gather and chop the wood for the stove. So it was like, you know, I'd go in, oh, I got to do rhythm guitars. Oh, first I have to chop wood. I mean, it makes no sense. But that's what we did. We had little time. I mean, the engineer, Tom, was great. I mean, everything was cool, but we had very little time. So we ended up mixing the album, you know, it's like 2.5 hours to mix it. Right. Which was crazy. And then when Metal Blade did the reissue, they paid for us to do a proper mix. And it was the exact same studio, same board, same tape machine, same engineer. So I hear, you know, a lot of people complain, you know, why did you remix a classic? Yeah. Well, you know, the classic was mixed in 2 hours. That was ridiculous. You know, the last couple songs on the record, we were just running it through with no mixing really at all. So for me, I don't look at it as changing a classic. I just look at it as giving it the proper mix that we would have done if we had the budget on the original recording session. So we really didn't. I think the only thing we changed the string part in the crucifix in the beginning to a better sounding string. That's it. Otherwise, saying everything, studio engineer, everything. We just had twice as long to mix.
Yeah. Very cool. It's funny. Back in the day, there used to be this flea marketplace, and they had there was a guy in the back corner, and he used to sell all these bootlegs and stuff like that. And I just started getting into music. It was like 1991-ish, and I brought up a Pearl Jam a bootleg or whatever. So I go home, listen to the bootleg. And at the end of the tape, there is this song, and it's this guy screaming. I couldn't tell what he was singing, but it ended up being Battle Zones. And I finally figured it out. I was on a message board, and I'm like, what is this song? Because I only have the end of it. And everybody, as soon as I put it on it, everybody knew exactly what it was. But I just wondered for years and years and years, who the hell was that band? And it was just funny they were on it. You guys were on the end of a Pearl Jam bootleg.
That is funny.
Or out of all the bands to be on, it's a Pearl Jam bootleg. Mark says Ample Destruction is classic, and he says you're welcome, and says it's his pleasure to be the admin for the page. And and he said you guys ordered some pizza.
we order pizza all the time as a band. I mean, you know, the big joke in the band is that I can eat pizza for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's probably true. We did a gig in Greece a few years ago with a wonderful promoter, and we were supposed to get a pizza, and we get over there, and he said that hey, we're going out for a nice, you know, like 6-course meal at a nice restaurant. And I was kind of punchy from a long flight and no sleep, and I'm like hell, I want my pizza.
Yeah.
And the rest of the band's going like, chill out, Mark. We're going to get this big meal. And I'm like, no, I want a pizza. I've been thinking about the pizza my whole flight. So, yeah, I just, you know, stopped my feet and acted like a 4-year-old. But I did get my pizza.
You are a pizza guy. You're always posting about pizza
on love Facebook. Pizza.
Where's been your favorite pizza so far?
I like, and you know, there's some great great pizzas in Chicago and you know, New York and in Naples, Italy, and you know, so there's world class pizza in all those places. I like a place here in Colorado. It's about an hour from me, called Dewdrop Inn. They have a crust that slightly tastes like you would make cinnamon rolls out of it. I mean, it's just got a hint of sweetness. It's got a great flavor. and they have a tangy sauce that really complements that crust, and they use the highest quality mozzarella possible. It's a good pizza. It's not cheap. It's probably about $30 for a pizza, but you know, they weigh about 8 pounds. And oh, wow. Yeah, four wow. adult men can eat one of their large pizzas. I mean, it's delicious. It's their family recipe. It's in a smaller town here in Colorado. It's wonderful. I love it. And now I want it. I haven't been there for 6 months.
Did you ever think about opening up your own pizza shop?
Yeah, I don't have the time. I mean, that would be fun. I know. I we used to joke in the band that I should open a pizza place called Evil Pizza with the "Deliver Us from Evil" slogan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then they said, "Come on, you can call your buddy Bill, and you can get the Warlord rights to do the Warlord song." And I'm like, "No, that's not going to happen." I love Warlord, so you know, the "Deliver Us from Evil," very corny joke.
It is, but hey, it would work. I think it would. There needs to be like a heavy metal pizza restaurant or whatever. That'd be awesome. There's always hamburger pizza, you know, heavy metal hamburger pizza places.
Yeah, I don't know if there is one. There's a bunch of burger places. I don't know if there's a heavy metal pizza place. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I think you might have to start that. And I see you got guitars behind you. You got a Flying V. At least you got like half of a Flying V, it looks like, behind you. What's your favorite guitar that you use? That's a full one. I didn't see the end.
Cost about $80. It's just a wall hanger.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I used to have a Dean V up there, and it was a great guitar. But Dean unceremoniously dropped me off the roster for no reason, and then just quit returning my calls, which is completely bizarre because I had been endorsing them for 10 years and appeared in the catalog, and then it just ended. So I didn't want any Dean thing in my house anymore, so I replaced it with just a cheap $80 V from Amazon. That Les Paul behind me is from the Gibson Mod Shop. I mean, it is a beautiful guitar. I just don't play it, though. I'm probably going to get rid of it. I for some reason, I don't like to have guitars that I don't play. I have an orange Les Paul Standard that I used a little bit on the record, and I use my ESPs on the record. So, and I use my Tele always on every Jag Panzer record, always has a Telecaster on it. So I'm cool with keeping those, but yeah, I think the blue Les Paul there's going to be on the chopping block soon.
Yeah. Is there a guitar you're going to take with you on tour?
Yeah. You know, I'm breaking my own advice. I always took cheaper guitars on tour because they can get beat up and lost, but you know, we're being filmed at Wacken or in Headbangers Open Air. So yeah, I'm going to break my own rules and take my ESP custom shop with me.
Oh, well, good luck.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be watching that thing like a hawk. My, the cheaper guitars I take on tour, you know, I just toss them around. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I just, you know, I really want to play my best guitar at all these cool gigs.
Yeah. Actually, another thing in the chat here, Cheeto, just came to say, hope you play Shadow Thief in Milwaukee. I've seen you guys in San Diego and Chicago, have both set lists, but no Shadow Thief.
Okay, you can count on Shadow Thief then. All right. I'm personally guaranteeing it.
You got it.
Yeah, you will hear it.
Very cool, very cool. When is the Milwaukee show?
It's in Madison. So, yeah, everybody in my band's calling it Milwaukee too. I mean, I got emails today. Hey, here's some flights to Milwaukee. And I said, I hope you didn't book to Milwaukee because it's in Madison. But the flights were correct. But I don't know why. I mean, they're completely different cities. But yeah, I hear it every day in our band chat. Hey, looking forward to Milwaukee. And I'm like, what's going on in Milwaukee?
Is it the Milwaukee Metal Fest? Is that maybe why?
Well, we played that before, and that was really cool. I mean, we had a great time at Milwaukee Metal Fest, but this is Blades of Steel at Madison. Our buddy Randy's a promoter. He's a great guy and a great promoter. You know, Ride's playing and Flotsam and Jets. I mean, it's just going to be a cool gig.
All right, cool. So don't go to Milwaukee. It won't be in Milwaukee. It'll be in Madison.
Yeah, don't go to Milwaukee. Go to Madison, where we will play Shadow Thief.
Very cool. That's awesome. You just made him very happy. And when is that?
I think it's September. It's September 27th or 28th. It's that the last Friday in September.
Okay. And Mike Warner.
I'm excited for that.
Very cool. Mike Warney wants to know what happened with John Schaefer.
In regards to what?
I have no idea. Got to
give me more information.
I have no idea. Maybe wrong band. I don't know. Did you ever deal with John Schaefer for anything?
I worked on the video for Glorious Burden, but that's it. You know, I don't really. Didn't really keep in touch with John. I mean, we had a great time working together. We toured a couple times, but I would only talk to John, when we do a gig with him or something. Hmm. And then we'd exchange nice words. I mean, we always got along really well.
Well, yeah, I don't know what he meant by that. Maybe he'll write in a minute. And then last thing, you guys just signed to Atomic Fire Records, right? Yeah. So, and that's a subsidiary of like Nuclear Blast, I think, right?
Well, it used to be Nuclear Blast. The everybody that started Nuclear Blast is at Atomic.
Is that Atomic? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So they had sold Nuclear Blast, to somebody. So then they started Atomic Fire. Yeah, we actually finished the Hallowed without a label. We'd never done that. Everything else we've ever recorded, we've had a label. So we thought, let's try it, without a label. And it was great. I mean, there's no, it's weird when a label gives you a budget because I'm like really good at sticking to budgets.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, we got to get this done. So on the Hallowed, we didn't have a budget, it was just whatever we need. So it was very liberating. And there was nobody that was asking for, let's hear what's going on so far. Nobody asking for that. So it was a very relaxed, very cool atmosphere. And so we finished the album. We have a business manager that shopped the album. I think we went to 10 labels and we got interest from 9 of them. Some of them bowed out right away because they were really cool labels, but they couldn't meet what we were asking for the record. So it came down to 3 labels, and they're all good labels. But we remembered that staff from Atomic Fire when they were in Nuclear Blast. We were on tour with Hammerfall, and the promotion was just outstanding. We couldn't believe how good they were promoting Hammerfall on Glory to the Brave. So that prompted us to sign with Atomic Fire. Yeah, and their promotion on the Hall has been incredible.
Yeah.
We as a band, we always wanted to kind of do our own promotion thing, and that's really frowned upon in the industry. But we thought we would ask Atomic Fire, and they said, oh no, go ahead. So we did our own postcard thing and our audio card, and did our own smaller promotion thing in conjunction with them. And I think that worked out really well.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I see. I get emails from them all the time with all the new bands. But yeah, they keep up with everything, and they're doing really good right now. Ken, you got anything else?
I got another one more off the wall question. Playing live, and I guess I'm just asking this question from my own personal experience, but do you prefer outdoor concerts or indoor concerts? Performing live outdoors or indoors?
I think I'm the only one in the band that loves outdoor shows. I don't do well in the heat. I mean, I live up near the mountains in Colorado, so it doesn't really get hot up here. It's like not. So I like the coolness of playing outside, because we're not doing outside gigs in Arizona or any place like that. So the places we're doing outside gigs, it's usually, a little bit cooler, maybe upper 70s or lower 80s, nice breeze going on. I prefer that. But I think my bandmates would all tell you indoors shows.
Yep, same here. It outdoor as a vocalist, I hated doing outdoor shows. It played hell with my voice. So that's it.
That's it. All right.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Oh yeah, it would be weird with a vocalist with all the weird delays you get outdoors. That would be tough.
Yeah. Well, it's that, and then I just always found that outdoor concerts, you know, 2, 3, 4 songs in, my throat is just drying out, like, and I'm drinking water like a fish, and then, you know, a few more songs in, and I gotta go to the bathroom. it just wasn't a lot of fun. Although those were some, I think probably the most enjoyable shows for performing was outdoors. The stage tended to be bigger, but yeah, I'm an indoor guy.
Yeah, very cool.
I like outdoors that you can see the whole audience. You know, yeah. Indoors, you see the first few rows, and outdoors, you know, you see the musicians in the back with their arms folded, shaking their head no, and I kind of like that.
That's true.
And there was one thing I did forget to ask. I think it was with the last album. There was a thing where I think Harry said he quit the band. What happened with that?
Yeah, that was a couple albums back. I guess that was about 12 years ago. There was just, we didn't have an agent at the time, and there was just no way to move forward. I mean, there was no gigs. No way to move forward, and it was getting so frustrating for everybody. I mean, we, you know, there was no record deal at the time, no agent, no anybody, and there it was just nothing to do. We were living in different parts of the country, and there was just no moving forward. So, you know, I didn't blame him at all. I mean, he had a lot of different opportunities. So, you know, he's my friend first, and then band members. Right. Okay. So, yeah. You know, as his friend, you know, if he had other opportunities, you know, take him.
Yeah. Okay. I thought maybe I had something, because he's doing so many things, man. He's doing that thing, the Three Tremors thing now with Sean Peck and Ripper Owens, and he's always doing stuff, man, but he's all over the place. But I thought maybe it had something to do with like conflicting stuff, but I totally get that. What do you think of the
he's always good about anything Jag Panzer needs to do, he'll make it work. So yeah. I mean, he's always great about that. And you know, everybody in the band, we all have very different views on doing other projects. You know, we got some guys that will do a lot of different things, and you know, Harry's one of them, and then we got some of us, myself, I only want to do Jag Panzer. I don't have any desire to do anything else. I've tried just jamming with guys for fun, and they're cool guys and good players, but it was just very frustrating for me because I just have a specific way I want things done. I don't like getting a song 80% there and saying, yeah, we're done, and it's just not fun for me. And that's no slam on the guys I was playing with, because they were having fun, and it was just fun guys jamming. But I think I'm a little too serious and not fun for that.
But hey, you know, you've been doing this since how long have you been? Like 81 80 80,
yeah,
early 80s, right? So you know, you know what you're doing, and you know what sound you want. So, you know, of course you're going to be like that. You know, you want to put out a good product. You don't want to put something with your name on it and sounds like shit in the end. So,
yeah,
I totally get it. And definitely this album does not sound like shit. It is a really great album, The Hollowed, and you need to go out and go get it right now. Go listen to it on Spotify if you can't buy the CDs, but or the record, but however you want to listen to it, just go listen to it. Mark, had a lot of fun with you on the show. I'm glad to finally get you on here, because I've been
awesome.
Yeah, I've been wanting you to come on this show for a very long time, so I'm glad that this album finally came out and we got to talk about it and some more stuff. Anything else you want to talk about?
Excited to hit the road next week.
Very cool. And when is that first show coming? When is the first show?
I think it's a week from Saturday.
Oh, wow. That's early, right? Where is that at?
That's in somewhere in Germany. I am not good at my European geography.
Maybe so Mark will
somewhere say. In Germany is the best. It's Headbangers Open Air, and we've never played it, but people tell me it's a fantastic show, and so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, all right, very cool. So hopefully everybody will go check that out, whoever's in Germany. And thanks everybody in the chat. I very much enjoyed you guys joining in. And again, thank you very much, Mark. And Ken, thank you for joining us.
Oh,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, even thanks, Ken.
Even though you got sticking your tongue out at us.
I just stopped looking at the upper corner here because I'm embarrassing myself. But I still enjoyed it, and it was really nice to meet you. And I agree with Wayne. I really like the new album. So
thank you.
Oh, Cheeto has a question before we leave here. He knows Joey was very much into the shred guitar scene. He wants to know about you. What blew your mind in the 80s?
I wasn't into the shred scene. I mean, I had a definite appreciation for the skill. Mm. And, you know, a guy like Joey's just a monster player. I mean, he's great on record. But if you spend time with Joey, he's just record doesn't even capture what he does. He's a great player. Mm. I was really the thing that blew my mind was just the whole new wave of British heavy metal scene. You know, like I heard the Angel Witch self-titled album, and it was just phenomenal, and it was cool. And then I bought Witchfind Stage Fright album, which was brilliant. Those records changed my life, because before I heard the new wave of British heavy metal, all I had was what was on the radio here in Colorado, and it was stuff with very high budgets, very expensive photo sessions, good looking guys. I mean, it was just things that I was not. And in the neighborhood we grew up in, I mean, there's no way we could even get a nice photo session or anything. So the new wave of British heavy metal, it's like, I was like, oh man, these guys aren't focusing on image. They're not, they don't have giant stage shows. Mm. I don't see like huge production photo set. I just hear cool music. So moved me so much that there was a heavy metal scene that just involved around the quality of the music. I mean, I thought that was incredible, and I couldn't get enough of it. The store that sold the new wave of British heavy metal albums was about an hour, 10 minute drive for me. It was up in Denver, and me and John or Harry or all of us, we would go up there every 2 weeks, right? When we got money, just to buy a vinyl, or, you know, sometimes just buy a fanzine or maybe just a button. I mean, that whole scene was just, it was so cool. I never even dreamed that there could be a music scene as cool as the new wave of British heavy metal scene.
Yeah. And so I wish one of my co-hosts was on, because he loves new wave of British heavy metal. That's like his favorite thing too. He'd probably talk about that for hours. Is there any new bands that you really like?
We have a band. You know, there's so many new metal bands with really young guys in their 20s.
Yeah.
There's Blind Oath out of Tulsa, which are great. There's Chamber Mage out of my hometown of Colorado Springs. Okay. So, I'm really excited about, these new bands. And it's funny, we have a Megadeth tribute band that's fronted by a woman here who's a great guitar player, and she sings. I mean, I've seen them like 6 times. I mean, really? Every time they play, they're just phenomenal. They're called Cryptic Writings. I love live music. So, and it's cool seeing these bands pick up around me. There's a hard rock band in town called Dirty Kings that are phenomenal. Mm. I mean, it's just, they remind me a little bit of like the Angels or Angel City, you know, the band from Australia.
Okay.
Dirty Kings are great. I've seen them, you know, probably 5 or 6 times. So, yeah, lots of cool, new, exciting young bands around me.
Very cool. Very cool. And Mark says they have tons of pizza in the Headbangers Open Air, so you should be fine.
Oh, man. I didn't think I could get any more excited about the gig.
Now we can't wait to get there. All right. So thank you very much, Mark, again, for coming on the show. And I just want to tell everybody, thank you very much for getting us to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. And finally. Now we can, I don't know what we can do now, but the winner actually got some cool prizes. They got the Severed Angel CD that just came out in May. They got my other band, Project Resurrect. They got that album. And they also got, and I don't have it on me, but they also got a Def Leppard tribute album that, Rats Out Review and Friends was on. We did a Def Leppard song. I can't remember what the song it is, but we're on that. So you're going to get that and a bunch of stickers. And actually, I think it's the guitar player from the band Clay Morian. He actually was the 1,000th subscriber. So he's getting all that. And you'll get it soon. I just don't, maybe Friday or something, I'll send that out. But you're going to get it.
Clay Morian's a great band. Oh my God.
Yep. And then to know they're subscribed to my channel. Are you subscribed to my channel, Mark?
No, I don't know if I'm subscribed to anything. I need to start doing that.
You're going to have to start subscribing to people's channels, especially mine.
Well, I just grew up in this mindset in my neighborhood. Don't subscribe to anything. Don't subscribe to anything. It was I don't know why that was just the vibe in the neighborhood growing up, because people were always going to door to door. Hey, would you like to buy a subscription to Popular Mechanics? So there's this whole like, don't. So it's just been, I don't think I'm subscribed to anything. Like, I watch YouTube every day, like, not even signed in. I don't even think I would. So maybe I need to start subscribing, because
you're gonna have to. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything.
It does. It and it sucks on YouTube, because I'll watch things for about 2 months, unsubscribe, and then it'll just clear everything out. And then I'll go one morning and go, okay, let me see some of my guitar videos. Wait, how to crochet a pan holder? What? I don't want this.
Yeah, you gotta get signed in for that.
You know, fantasy league lacrosse tips, and, you know, mating cycles of hippos, and I'm just like, wait, all my guitar videos are gone. So I guess I need to subscribe.
You need to subscribe. Yeah, and you gotta sign in, and it'll keep all that stuff. So
that's okay.
Again, thank you very much for coming on the show, Mark. We had a lot of fun. And like I said, please go out and go listen to The Hollowed by Jack Panzer. You'll love it. And everybody in chat, thank you. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Rats Out Review. Go to ratsoutreview.com. Ken, where can we go to hear Absalon? He doesn't even know. You're terrible.
I think you asked me this question.
I did, and you didn't answer it then either.
And I'm like, but we got a website, and you know, right off the top, I'm good at promoting the band.
You're real good.
You could go to Slip Trick Records.
No, don't go to Slip Trick Records.
we're still there. That's another story. Working on getting ready for the next one. So.
Right. Just search for Absalon, and jagpanzer.com, I think, is the website. Yeah. Jack. Yep. So everyone go to jagpanzer.com. And then we will see you guys next week. Somebody's on next week. Oh, I think, what is next week's date? I don't know. Somebody's on next week. Hold on. I was prepared for that. Lance Lopez. A lot of people probably don't know what it is, but he will be on next week. Oh, no, he won't be. Next week is the 26th. Never mind. Next week is Carl Kennedy. That's right. I don't even know what I'm doing.
Oh, from the Rods.
From the Rods. Yes, he will be on next week.
He is one of, I used to write musicians letters all the time when I was like 15 and 16. And he was one of him and Chris von Rahr for Crocus are the only two that ever wrote me back.
Oh, really? So that's cool.
I never forgot that, Carl. Mr. Kennedy, thank you very much. You helped a young kid with your answers.
Very cool. Well, if you want to come on next week and talk to him about it, you can.
I'll be on tour.
You'll be on tour. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I'll tell him. I'll tell him for you.
Okay.
He's a very cool guy, though. Very talkative. He was actually on a show not too long ago. We did like a 2-hour show with him, because he just talk. But he was cool. He's done a lot of stuff. So, you know, he had a lot to talk about. So very cool. All right, everybody. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Later.
All right.